out again as soon as you are in. There ain't no short-handled shovels, no axes, saws, or picks. I'm a-going to stay where you sleep all day, where they hung the Turk that invented work in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. I'll see you all this coming fall in the Big Rock Candy Mountains.
Those of you who saw the film, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, probably recognize that performance. And for that matter, if you haven't seen it, maybe you recognize it anyway. Of course, you know the name of the song, Big Rock Candy Mountain, performed by Harry McClintock, who also wrote the words and the music. And that movie has just been sort of in my mind lately. I saw it a while ago. And, of course, a lot of fun musical stuff in there. And I just happened to pull it off my desk as a by way of semi-introduction to the first segment on Live and Local here today. The show is your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. Coming up, I will be talking with Chester Always, who is music director of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana. They are giving a summer concert this Sunday in Champaign. Happens to be on the anniversary of the death of Johann Sebastian Bach. And, of course, if you take Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, turn it into an acronym, you come up with BACH, depending upon how you do it, of course. That's how they do it. And so they obviously took it as a good excuse to have a concert that day. It's a choral concert. I'll be talking with Chet about that coming up in a little while. But first, we have a segment on the current production at Danville Light Opera, which is actually their musical theater youth program, a performance of a musical called The Return of Halley's Comet, which is happening this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I have with me the director of the show, who is Charlie Hester, and also her son, Tim Mills Hester, who I am assuming is in the show. Thanks both for coming in.
Thank you for having us today, Kevin.
And Charlie, as you just heard from the sound of the voice, is in fact a woman, which was a surprise to me.
I am a woman, yes. I get that a little often. So.
I'm sure you do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So The Return of Halley's Comet, first of all, as far as you know, did I say that right? Because I've always used to, when I was a kid, hear it as Halley's, but then somewhere along the way, I thought I heard maybe it's Halley's, but...
I think that it's a regional thing. I've heard a few clips from people over on the other side of the pond, and they always say Halley's. We're from the Midwest. Maybe it's out of sheer laziness, but we've just taken to calling it Halley's Comet. So we're just going to stick with that for the rest of the show. So it's too late to change it.
I didn't know if Samuel French, who's the people who provide the materials for the show, might happen to have told you this is how it's pronounced, but
no.
Just curious. I was always just curious. Well, I mentioned Samuel French. The better name to mention, or more pertinent name to mention, is the name of Andrea Green, who is the playwright.
Yes, she is.
And I gather this is not the first play of hers that Danville Light Opera has done.
No. Last year, I directed one of her shows entitled On the Other Side of the Fence. And at the very beginning, when I first decided to direct that show, I wrote Andrea a letter and expressed to her why I was so moved by the show she had written, what I intended to do with it, and told her that, you know, we would love any input back. Her input was she came and spent the performance weekend with us and with the children, and she met us all, and she was a tremendous guest for Danville Light Opera to have for the weekend. And she's coming back this year as we are doing her production of The Return of Halley's Comet. So we're very excited. She'll be here on Thursday.
You said the other play was called The Other Side of the Fence?
On the Other Side of the Fence.
And you found it particularly moving. I don't know anything about it. Why was that?
All of Andrea's show come with a message about building a better community, talking to both the audience and the cast members about ways that we can get along and build a stronger sense of who we are and how we relate to other people. Andrea is actually a musical therapist, and so she believes, much like I do, that music and theater are here to heal us. And so it's a great experience with the kids because we learn a lot. We learn about each other. We learn about ourselves, and it's quite fun. So we all feel like we walk away from every show being better members of our community.
And I know that doing something for the community is something you're actually encouraging the audience to do.
Yes.
If you want to mention that before we actually talk about this particular show.
Sure. We are asking all of our audience members for the shows on Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday afternoon to please bring in non-perishable items and toiletries. Those will be donated to the YRFC Women's Shelter in Danville. That goes to help the battered women and children in our community. And last year, we were able to take a full van load of items to the shelter. This year, I'm hoping for 2 van loads.
So, wow.
Yep.
And is that something that DLO typically does, or is that particular to you and the youth program?
That's something that I introduced starting last year. I think it's really important to teach children that we are never too young to make a difference. We're never too old. There's no reason why we can't do something that helps other people. And so collecting items like toothpaste and toothbrushes, it's just a wonderful way to teach them at a very early age how important it is to be a generous person and to just simply give what you have because it makes all the difference to somebody who's in need.
And I think I noted from your newsletter from Danville Light Opera that the women's shelter is especially interested in toiletries in general, diapers and wipes.
Diapers and wipes. Those are 2 pricey items, and we want to make sure that they always have plenty of those on hand. So
let's talk about this particular show, Danville Light Opera Musical Theater Youth Program. First, well, before we get to the show, is that a program that has been going for some years, or is it fairly recent?
It has. It's been continuing on for several years, in fact. I took over it last year. It's something where we have children from age 8 up through high school, and they spend their summer with us usually 3 or 4 nights a week, and we just work on the basics of learning theater, learning a show, and then producing it at the end of our showtime. So it's really fun, and this year we have a lot of kids. We have 43, I believe, in our cast right now, and so that's 43 kids and all of their parents trying to coordinate during summer while it's really busy. So It's a labor of love, I will tell you that, and I love every minute of it.
So age 8 through high school, what's the balance out of curiosity with the younger versus the older?
We usually we're pretty heavy in the age 8 up through junior high. Usually by the time kids are in high school, they're finding summer jobs and, you know, they have other activities that they're wanting to do. So we really don't get too many high schoolers. This year we were fortunate. 2 of our choreographers are high school students. And so this is something that we just really wanted to support them in. And, you know, it's a great way to learn leadership and, you know, look great on a college resume for them. So we were very happy to have them help.
So tell us about the return of Halley's Comet. What's the story? How does it relate to kids particularly well, do you think? Looks like you're nodding at son Tim to give the synopsis of that.
Do you want to tell him a little bit about the show?
Sure.
Yeah, why don't you bring the microphone just a little closer to you there, Tim?
There you go.
Basically, the show is about, well, there are these, well, Halley's Comet is coming by, and I don't want to give too much away, but there's some creatures that fall from the comet, and everybody's just not even liking them except for the poor side of the town.
The poor side of the town likes the creatures?
Yeah, they want to be their friends. Well, unwealthy.
Yes. We don't say poor, we say not wealthy.
And so it's just, like, the whole show is about finding a way to, like, being able to work with each other and not being rude or mean.
So what are some of the dramatic things that happen, or at least initially, so, you know, we have sort of a setup of, aside from the comet comes, which it only does.
Sure.
How often?
It comes every
75 years, I'm pretty sure.
75
yeah, 75 years,
yeah.
I believe.
I knew it was
75
a good
or 76.
Pretty sure it's 75.
Is it?
Yeah.
So our
he
show
sounds pretty confident. I'd go with it.
Yeah, our show takes place in the year 2061. So it will be the next time that Halley's Comet arrives.
I'm trying to do the math backwards. What does that mean that
it came
last
in 85.
85?
Yep, 1985.
Yeah.
So that would be 76 years. So, well, the town of Centuryville is in great trouble. They have a mayor who is not listening to the townspeople, and she's steamrolling everybody in the town because she has a lot of money and she uses that to her advantage. And so the not wealthy side of town is being quite overlooked. And so they decide that they need to have some new representation. So a lot of the show is based around the mayoral election that will be happening in the town of Centuryville. We were fortunate enough to have Mayor Scott Eisenhower come in and talk to our children at rehearsal one evening about what a mayor's job really is like and, you know, why it is so hard to be the mayor and ways that we can all be better mayors just on our own of our community. So it's been a really fun experience. We've learned a lot along the way.
So. Tim, what did you take from that visit from Mayor Eisenhower?
Well, he has a really great sense of humor.
Well, that's got to be helpful for any politician, for that matter.
Well, you're not supposed to cheat at re-election, which is kind of what the mayor in the show is doing.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we pass out ballots with their names already marked, and so the mayoral candidate are all passing that out. And Mr. Eisenhower thought that was a great idea, but didn't feel that he could get away with that at the next election, having his ballots pre-marked. So
fairly encouraging to the folks of Danville,
exactly.
I'm sure that he should feel that way.
He's a really good sport, so he found that quite amusing. So yes.
What, Tim, first of all, what role are you playing in this production?
I am the historian, which it's kind of like being the narrator because I'm the oldest Centaurian, which is the name of the town Centuryville. And I'm telling the story about how the Halleyans, like in 85, they saved a little girl from being trapped in a well and they brought her back to her parents. So I'm just kind of explaining that in the first song.
So the Halleyans apparently not all that bad as the more wealthy folks seem to think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Does this, without knowing more about the story, is there any danger of a story like this that you sort of pit rich against not so rich, or does everybody come out at least decent in the end?
In the end, I think that everybody finds a way to work together, and it's because they learn to listen to one another, and they start taking everyone else's feelings into consideration. And as we all know, sometimes as adults and in the world, we have to learn to listen to one another and put aside our differences and find a way to work together for the best option to move forward. And that's exactly what we discover in our little town of Centuryville.
We're talking with Charlie Hester, who is director of Danville Light Opera Musical Theater Youth Program production of The Return of Halley's Comet, which is taking place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday and Saturday shows are at 7:30. Sunday matinee is at 2 o'clock.
And also at 7.
At 2 o'clock. Oh, at 7?
Yep, at 7.
I have mistranscribed this. I probably can't read my own writing somewhere along the line. So 7:30, 7:30, and 7 o'clock. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then Tim Mills Hester, who is also in the production. I know you brought your two daughters along with you. Are they also in the show?
They are, yes.
But a little shy to actually come in and talk to us.
They were today. They said they're saving their voices for tonight's rehearsal. So everybody's a little tired today. So we thought Tim and I can handle this. We got it, right?
Not me, of course.
Yeah, he's always got a voice.
Yeah, is there a lot of singing in the show?
There is a lot of singing. Andrea is a fantastic composer. She's written all of these songs, and there is a lot of music. We have 14 or 15 songs that we're producing in the show. So it's a lot. It's a lot to ask of a group of 43, 8 to 15-year-olds or what we have performing in the show. So.
And we should give some credit to the music director for the production, Chris Huffman.
Yes. And she has done a fabulous job.
She's helped a lot.
She has helped a lot. She's been writing in harmonies for the kids, and they sound amazing. So we're very proud of them.
Well, we can have a, we have a sample here. I actually pulled this off of YouTube. Y'all had put up a YouTube clip of the title track, I guess, as it
yes.
were, the title song, The Return of Halley's Comet. These are the kids from the Danville Light Opera production, and you're listening to Live and Local.
Okay.
Assume that's the voice of the music director, or is that the voice of the stage director in there at the
end? Oh, that was the voice of the stage director. Yeah, I was holding the camera, so I was closest to the mic on the on the recording. So sorry about that.
Oh, that's fine. And that's the cast of The Return of Halley's Comet from Danville in rehearsal, I guess, just within the last number of days.
Actually, that was one of our very first rehearsals.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that sounds pretty good.
We've improved since then.
One hopes, you know, one always rehearses in order to improve. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast today is made possible by these business partners, Swire's Land and Management Company of Danville, EAG Company Incorporated of Fairmount, and Cannon Farms of Camargo. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. I mentioned earlier that the playwright, Andrea Green, will be joining your cast and visiting the community, including for a meet and greet on Saturday at the Village Mall.
Yes, we will be there at Center Court at 2:00, and we will have our piano brought out, and you'll be able to hear some original Andrea Green music that is not associated with the show, and we'll be there from 2 until 3:30. On Saturday afternoon at Center Court at Village Mall.
And Andrea Green herself will be singing these songs.
Yes, she will be. And she is quite the performer. She's so much fun to have around. And her attitude and her spirit just lights up a room. And so you don't want to miss it. She's a wonderful person to meet. And she will inspire you to just be a better person.
Does she get in town early enough to have a chance to work with the cast?
She will come in Thursday afternoon. So she will see our final dress rehearsal. That is also the performance where we have some of the mentally disabled adult adults in our community, we invite them to come in and watch our dress rehearsal as well. They normally don't get a chance to get out and go to a lot of different productions or things. So that's something that we started doing last year so that they can come out and enjoy it and they see it free of charge. And then Andrea will talk with us on Friday afternoon and we'll talk about the things in the show that she liked and that, you know, maybe things that we can tweak a little bit before the final performance on Saturday. So,
and from your experience from last year, I imagine the cast got a lot out of working with her, felt some inspiration.
We did. I think it's her desire to always give it your best, and giving it your personal best is something that's so wonderful to encourage children to do, because every child's level of best is different. And so it's amazing how when kids really put their heart into it, how a show just grows and blossoms and just becomes something so incredibly amazing. And I can tell you already from what I've seen at Tech Week rehearsals this week, we're off to a great start. So it's just going to be a very fun performance, and it's going to be visually interesting to watch, and the kids sound outstanding. So,
Tim, have you been in shows before?
Yes, this year is my fourth year being in DLO for the musicals.
Mm-hmm. And have you had leading roles before? I assume you'd call the narrator a leading role.
I guess you could. Last year, I played the part, well, the two, like, main people were Ham and Bacon, which there's a girl pig and a boy pig. Bacon was the girl, and I was Ham, the boy. And so, yeah, I guess you could say that I was one of the leading roles.
And what do you particularly enjoy about this show, or for that matter, about doing musicals in general?
It's fun. You get to, like, be able to see old friends and kind of reconnect with, like, spare time. It's also a lot of fun just to show off your talents to everybody.
Do you are you involved in music other than doing the summer shows?
Yeah. I've attempted to write songs before. I've also done show choir for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And this year I'm going to be a Red Coat at Northridge.
Red Coat is, I've heard of the singing Red Coats, but I don't remember exactly what they are.
They're the show choir directed by David and Jennifer Woodrow at Northridge Middle School.
They do quite well, don't they?
They do very well. Things. Yes, they are outstanding performers, and all three of our kids made it this year. So we'll be on the road we'll be the show choir parents. So
I know you're excited about this, Tim. You sort of made a funny face.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
I think was making the face at the fact that Mom and Dad will always be there at all of his show choir performances.
True.
Of course they
will. That's what the face was for? Yeah, okay. Thought we'd better understand things pretty clearly. Uh-huh. All right, well, it's the return of Halley's Comet, Danville Light Opera's annual musical theater program for youth. Performances, let's correct what I said earlier. This Friday and Saturday night at 7 o'clock, not at 7:30, 7 o'clock. And then the Sunday matinee is at 2 o'clock. And if somebody wants tickets, what do they have to do?
I think at this point, if you just show up at the doors at Bremer, the Bremer Auditorium at Danville Area Community College, tickets will be available at the door. Sunday is always the show that sells out. So if you are planning to come on Sunday, get there and get there early so that you can make sure that you get a seat and that you don't miss these amazing kids.
And if you want more information on what's going on at Danville Light Opera, the website is?
Should be danvillelightopera.com.
Yeah, I seem to remember it was something. Well, in any event, Google that, you'll find it. I do know that their fall show, adult show as it were, is going to be Rent.
Yes, directed by my friend Jesse Pierce, and he is quite outstanding as well. So that'll be a wonderful show.
All right, and it's Charlie Hester who is directing this particular show. She brought in son Tim Mills Hester, who was one of the actors, one of the 40-some actors involved in this production. I appreciate both of you coming in and joining us on Live and Local today.
Thank you so much for having us, Kevin. It's been a pleasure.
Our broadcast is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, an authorized Karastan, Broadloom, and Rug dealer at 11 West Port Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. That's some of the early music, I believe, that was in O Brother, Where Art Thou? James Carter and The Prisoners in Poe Lazarus, arrangement by Alan Lomax, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our next segment on the show today is about a concert that is happening this coming Sunday evening at 7:30 at the Episcopal Chapel of St. John the Divine on South Wright Street in Champaign. And it's called Bach and Beyond. It happens to be on the anniversary of the death of Johann Sebastian Bach. Bach is the acronym used by the Baroque artists of Champaign-Urbana, whose chorus is putting this concert on, and we have one of our regular guests with us, who's the music director of Bach, Chester Always, and always appreciate having you on the show. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I think I have resisted ever using that before.
That's good.
It's good that I resisted, right?
Yeah.
It had to happen sometime, just that the way things came out. Bach and Beyond, not the first time you've done a mostly not Baroque music choral concert.
True.
A couple summers ago,
we did one of these too. It gives us an opportunity to branch out and do some repertory that lies outside the chronological and stylistic constraints of the Baroque era. And the choir really enjoys that, I think.
Well, and it should be said, as we have said in previous conversations, that the Baroque artists... The core of the Baroque artist has been for quite some time the chorus,
right,
which pretty much meets more or less all year long.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm.
And is involved in virtually every concert?
No, two or three a year. I mean, this year, coming year it'll be two. This year it was three. So.
And obviously, except for this one, generally Baroque music of some form or another.
Yeah.
And you say the chorus particularly enjoys doing some of the non-Baroque stuff. Does it tend to be the same chorus that does the Baroque?
It is, but it's also enhanced. I mean, and I thought it was going to be significantly enhanced, but, you know, things happen in the summertime and people drift away or find they've got conflicts that come up. But we started out with like 55 singers, I think, something like that, which is very big for this choir. The Bach choir is normally around 40. We're down to around 49 or 50 now.
And just because people decided to go on vacation?
Things came up and, you know, it's summertime, you know.
Sure.
And,
well, I guess part of the gist of my, there were two parts of the gist of my question. One was that people do go away and, you know, you recruit a different group. And it occurred to me that some people who sing for Bach do so because they especially like Baroque music. Or do they just sing because they like singing in a good chorus?
I think they like singing a good chorus, and I think that no question this program attracted some people who don't normally sing or who may sing with other groups during the course of the regular year. And because the rehearsals are in the evening rather than on Saturday morning, which I really like much better, and it was a shortened, we only have 6 weeks of rehearsal for this program, and I wish we had more.
One always wishes that, don't we? Yeah, exactly. The concert will begin with some music by Bach.
Yes, we're doing a chorale motet in honor of Bach. It's a chorale fantasia that happens in Cantata 21, Ich hatte viel Bekümmernis, and it's the ninth movement, and it's a setting for three accompanying voices, and then the Cantus Firmus is the chorale, the hymn, If Thou But Suffer God to Guide Thee. There are two verses. It's quite lovely and not difficult.
When you say the accompanying chorus.
Yeah, so the three of the four voices of the chorus with accompaniment on the organ sing a separate set of words as a framework, a polyphonic imitative framework for the presentation of a hymn melody in longer notes.
And the rest of the program, though...
After that piece, it was chronological until last night.
Oh?
We changed the order. It was chronological and alphabetical until last night. But that's the only Baroque piece we're doing. We're doing also Brahms, which we've done before, and the choruses love singing Brahms. We're doing a piece by Benjamin Britten because it's the centenary of his birth. 2013, he was born in 1913, and we're doing the Rejoice in the Lamb, which is one of his most famous pieces and a delight to sing. And then we're doing three choruses from the Rachmaninoff Vespers because it's fabulous choral music and they love singing it.
And here is, I'm just going to stop mm-hmm. you right there for the moment since I happen to have the CD in my hands.
Right.
This is the... probably by far the best known of those choruses.
Absolutely, yeah. It's the one that almost anyone can do to some level.
All the better if you happen to have low basses, but that's true for the whole piece, really.
Yeah.
Just about the whole piece, except for the women's stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Here's the Robert Shaw Festival Singers in Bogorodice Dievo, Rejoice, O Virgin, rough translation.
It's basically an Ave Maria, yeah.
Which will be on a concert by the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana's Chorus on Sunday night in Champaign. It's a fabulous piece of music to hear and to sing. Bogorodice Dievo, a setting of roughly the Ave Maria, Hail Mother Mary, by a performance here by the Robert Shaw Festival Singers, Robert Shaw conducting, of Sergei Rachmaninoff's Vespers, which is real version, real name is All Night Vigil, Mass for Unaccompanied Chorus. I guess you could call it... They call it a mass here. It's not really a mass.
It's Vespers. It's an Orthodox Vespers
evening,
service.
Evening service. Mm-hmm. And lots of movements in the whole piece. If you do the whole thing, you're doing, what, three?
There are 15 choruses. Pieces in it.
But you're doing, what, three of them?
We're doing the three easier ones.
Yeah.
And shorter.
We are the chorus of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana. I shouldn't say we. I'm not singing the chorus. Chester always is conducting. He's the music director of the group, and their concert is this coming Sunday night at 7:30 at the Chapel of St. John the Divine on South Rice Street in Champaign, not to be confused with the St. John's Chapel, Catholic Chapel, one block
west. Yeah.
You can park in the same places to get to either one of them, but if you show up at the west one, you won't hear a thing, probably. You'll certainly hear their concert then if you go down. It's a beautiful church to sing in, really.
Yes. And this choir is a little large, actually, for that church. It's been a bit of a struggle to try to find a way to get everybody arranged and so nobody not squished like sardines into the place. We tried a number of different options last night. We've come up with a couple of things I think will work.
And is it just physically large for their bodies or physically large for the sound?
Well, it's a wonderful acoustic to sing in. I'm saying we just have a lot of people for the size of the room. It's hard to get all of them in shoehorned into the upper place up by the altar, although we can do it.
When you do a non-Baroque concert, such as you're doing with the chorus, do you give the singers any say, or do you just pick some things you think they'll like?
Yes. I sort of ran things by them for this concert, particularly the Whitaker piece was one of the main attractions, and the Rachmaninoff. Brahms is pretty typical fare. Britten, I did on my own because of the anniversary and being somewhat of a Britannophile myself. And then the Bach was because it was on his death day, so.
As you say, the Whitaker piece, used by Eric Whitaker,
right,
having to do with Leonardo da Vinci.
Yes, it's a piece Marlis and I heard premiered at the ACDA convention in San Antonio in 2001. It's called Leonardo Dreams of His Flying Machine. It's an original poem by Charles Anthony Silvestri. And it's a, as one of the singers in the choir said, it's like a Monet paintings, impressions, if you will, of the process of Leonardo dreaming of the idea of flight. And he quite famously has lots of sketches of various machines by which he thought man could fly.
And any idea what inspired Mr. Whitaker to set this to music? Seems a
he had a commission
choice
to fulfill,
and
this was the text he got. And it's interesting that given the kind of Italian Renaissance, you know, text and the ideas in here, he borrows and riffs on a lot of ideas from Monteverdi, the Claudio Monteverdi, the famous Italian madrigalist. If you play it, or when you hear it, you'll hear lots of chain suspensions and imitation, where he releases pigeons one by one, and it's one by one. The choir sings one at a time, going through in imitation. So it's very clever.
There are no pigeons released during the performance.
No animals harmed or in any way used.
Or used at all, yeah. That's no danger of things dropping on the heads. Of
right,
the,
yeah, that's true.
Eric Whitaker is a name who I've heard more and more over the years, and I was surprised recently, because I'd never seen a picture of him before, to at least discover that he appears to be quite young. I don't know how young
he is. He's disgustingly young.
Yeah.
He was born in 1970, so that makes him...
That's not so young.
Well, for me, that's... but by the time he was 30, he was already a very well-known name.
We're going to hear some of this piece in
right,
just a few moments, but what is it that he does in his writing that has become so appealing to so many people?
He has a gift for sonority and color, and he makes it possible for even middling choirs, you know, not average choirs, to sing really contemporary-sounding music by a clever manipulation or sustaining of basically tonal chords. So you'll have a triad and he'll add a note, or he'll have a scale and each note will be sustained to create a cluster. But it's so easily done that anybody, any choir, and even good high school choirs have sung this music. And it gives one the sense that we're really doing something contemporary, and it's quite beautiful. You know, there's some gorgeous sounds.
Which is probably the bottom line.
Absolutely.
Well, let's hear some of Leonardo Dreams of His Flying Machine, music by Eric Whitaker, which will be sung by the chorus of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana this Sunday night in Champaign. Music by Eric Whitaker called Leonardo Dreams of His Flying Machine, as in Leonardo da Vinci. That piece will be performed by the chorus of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana Sunday night in Champaign. And you're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. My guest is the Baroque Artists, music director Chester Alwis. And their second Bach and Beyond choral program that they've given, I guess, the first one a couple years ago. And we mentioned earlier that it's the 100th anniversary year of the birth of Benjamin Britten, and you're doing an exceedingly cool piece of his called Rejoice
right
in the Lamb.
Yes.
There's a movement in here. Well, first of all, where does this all come from? I know where a part of it comes from. I guess it's all...
It's all from the same place. It's a thousand-some-odd-line poem by Christopher Smart, who was at that time incarcerated in an insane asylum. Not because he was necessarily insane, although he was of a strange mind, as some said, but people were often put in that place because they hadn't paid their debts or they were just kind of, nobody wanted to take care of them. But while he was there, he wrote this long and sprawling is the best word for it, poem in which he tried to conceive or concoct every imaginable way one might praise the Creator. So you get those, it's a litany-like thing. Let, or 4444 individual lines.
So let man and beast appear, let Nimrod the mighty hunter bind, let Ishmael dedicate a tiger, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
And then this second section, for I will consider my cat Jeffrey. I don't remember if I ever read the whole piece, but I certainly read this part of it, and somewhere along the line it inspired me to, in fact, name a cat.
Ah.
After him, and we called him Sir Jeffrey, but that's a slightly long story, and spelled it this way, which is sort of peculiar.
G-E-O-F, or J-E-O-F.
J-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y.
Yeah.
You've got some story about this section,
well,
I understand.
Well, if you listen to this piece and people that perform it, it sounds like a legitimate poem, and one would expect that because it's a set solo piece for soprano and organ. In fact, in the actual poem, this text is a conflation of lines drawn from all over the place, and that's true of the whole cantata text. There are hardly any. The opening is all mostly consecutive lines, but after that, Britten or someone working for him pulled lines from various places. So some of the lines that seem to refer to the cat Jeffrey, for he does this, have nothing to do with the cat Jeffrey. But it works. It's a charming piece.
And we're going to hear, I'm looking to see who's the soprano soloist in this particular recording. Don't find it offhand. But it's the Corydon Singers, led by Matthew Bast, at the organ is Thomas Trotter, because only in this case the soprano matters. And the soprano singing it for you guys is going to be Katie Buzard, who was actually on our show just last week, singing with a bunch of cellists.
She sings it beautifully, as you can imagine.
I can imagine. And choral and solo singing being what it often is, you may or may not have actually heard all those words. So I'm just going to read the last line because it's wonderful. For I am possessed of a cat, surpassing in beauty, from whom I take occasion to bless Almighty God. Text by Christopher Smart and used by Benjamin Britten in Rejoice in the Lamb. That was one of one of several sections in a 19 or so minute piece, which will be performed by soloists in chorus with the Baroque artist Champaign-Urbana. Chester always going to conduct. And, of course, that is not a Baroque piece, and it is almost exclusively not a Baroque concert.
I should point out that Scott Montgomery is playing the organ.
Wonderful organist.
Yeah. That's a very important part of that piece, as you know.
Yeah. National award-winning recitalist who happens to live right here in Champaign-Urbana.
Right.
Still. And Chet always is the music director, and it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Besides the piece we're going to end up with here in a moment, some music by Johannes Brahms, other music that we haven't mentioned so far?
I think we've covered
everything. Did we cover it all?
Britten and Bach and Brahms. We're going to sing Brahms, and you're going to play some Brahms.
I am going to play
Whitaker
some
and Rachmaninoff. So yeah, we've covered the five groups.
And what's the hardest to do?
The Whitaker, hands down.
Because
rhythm. The second half of the piece is a kind of visual portrayal of somebody flying through the air. And it's basically rhythms and sounds. So he's making a montage of impressionistic kind of sounds. There's really not much text. The only line of text which is sung by solos is Leonardo a volare. But he leaps off the top of his building and you get this la 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 la. And sound music, You know, that it's, and that's the troubling part for the choir, because it's layered rhythms. There are three or four different rhythms going on simultaneously.
Troubling for the choir, but I'm willing to bet they're having fun with it.
Oh, they love it. They love it. They haven't quite nailed it yet. We got closer last night.
Well, you've got what?
Yeah, we got two more rehearsals.
Two more. Oh, yeah. Piece of cake. Yeah. These things come together, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, Chad, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank
you, Kevin.
Hope
it's a wonderful concert.
Thank you.
And here is music by Brahms. So what is the piece we're going to hear?
We're going to hear Abendstündchen, which is the first of three part songs, Opus 42, sung by the RIAS Kammerchor Berlin, conducted by Marcus Creed.